For over a decade, the indigenous and low caste people of Kashipur, India have been fighting to keep an Alcan-backed bauxite mine off of their lands. This area in eastern India contains one of the largest deposits of bauxite ores in the entire world. In 1993, a consortium of private companies collectively known as UAIL was formed to initiate a project to extract these ores and produce alumina. Since 2003, a solidarity campaign in support of the Kashipur struggle has been actively organizing to put pressure on Montreal-based Alcan Inc. to divest from the project. Brooke Thorne de Kraft and Tamara Herman, two independent journalists from Montreal, recently visited the Kashipur region and filed this update.
The struggle in Orissa is almost 12 years old in the Kashipur district. And I think the important thing to understand is that even though a lot of the villages are very remote, people have seen displacement through other mega projects in Orissa. And people know that the majority of displaced people in Orissa end up in the urban slums. And they, you know, they have a good idea of what's coming. So the movement, I think, was based partially on that knowledge at the beginning and partially also on just the fact that people's lives are completely tied to the land in both a practical and in a sacred way in that region, because a lot of the people are tribal peoples who practice another religion that's not Hinduism and that's really connected to the land. And so basically the beginning of the struggle was when people asked a couple of questions as to why suddenly there were these strange men taking measurements and measuring rivers and whatnot on their land. And after that, it started to grow, and it started to get support from other organizations, and the PSSP was formed, and the PSSP is a people's movement group that's based in the village of Kachep there that's really been at the heart of the movement. And, you know, they've been doing incredible work, and they started mobilizing in some of the neighboring regions and some of the neighboring villages, and eventually NGOs in the area also became involved. And pretty soon, the basics of a movement were founded. And then in the year 2000, in December, there was a protest in the village of Maikonch. And three Adivasis were shot by police. And for a little while, the Kashipur issue was all over the media. And lots of human rights missions and independent fact-finding missions and solidarity activists went down to the region. And I think that the company, as it's known throughout Kashipur, which at the time was a conglomerate which included Alcan and a Norsk company and the Indian partner, which is Hindalco, felt a lot of pressure. And in Alcan's official line that they'd given us, after this, they stepped back and they reevaluated the situation. And they say that they're still in kind of a pre-feasibility study phase, but on the ground, that's not what seems to be happening at all. Things did cool down a bit in terms of police repression after 2000, but then in late November, early December of this year, tensions escalated again, and the strategy that many of the villagers accuse the company of using now is much more rooted in manipulation, bribery, corruption, and divide and conquer tactics. So although people haven't been shot since the year 2000, and although Kashipur is less maybe sensational and less in the news, the struggle has reached really another critical moment. Basically, things started looking a little strange in November. A bunch of local politicians came together to form what they call an all-party committee, and they held a meeting in favor of the mine. And this was strange for several reasons, one of which being that local politicians in general in Kashipur have not been known to agree on very much. And so the fact that suddenly all these parties were agreeing on supporting the mine rang some warning bells with certain people who, again, spoke of allegations of bribery on the part of the company. And so at this all-party committee meeting, there was also a demonstration. The company will say it was 15,000 people who attended, and the activists and people from the region, the communities, would say that it was 2,000 people. And there are widespread allegations of people from outside the region being paid to attend the demonstration. And apparently some people have said that a child actually died from food poisoning. There was free food that was given out to people at the same time. And I guess the important thing about this meeting is that even though we wanted to know whether or not people were paid and we wanted some kind of evidence, in a case of corruption like this, it's very hard to come up with any evidence. But just the fact that there was a demonstration to support the project for us means that there's obviously a show of resistance somewhere else. Otherwise, why would people demonstrate in support of the project? And so this kind of ignited some tensions in the Kashipur area. Before this, in October, the district collector had called a meeting called the Gram Sabha, which is required by the Indian constitution in tribal areas, such as Kashipur. And usually it's the communities that call this type of meeting. And the process is very participatory, and everyone's allowed to listen and to give input. And in this case, again, it was the unelected mayor, the district collector, who called the meeting. And only some families were invited, not all families. And according to many of the families who did attend, they were not allowed to air any of their worries or concerns. They were only allowed to speak and to vote. And again, the masses basically were not invited. And so these events for us were important in that they allowed the company to claim that there's consent for the project, growing consent for the project in the area. And a response when we talked about this, when we asked Alcan about this, they said that they were encouraged to see that there was growing support in the area. But on December 1st in particular, things looked quite different because suddenly there was a new police outpost that was being constructed. And the area is already heavily policed. There was already a police post just down the road. And the people saw this as an attempt to wash the anti-mining movement even further. And so they staged a blockade. And we do have the official police testimony from this blockade, and we have recorded testimonies from people who attended in particular, and then we have the Alcan version, and as you can probably imagine, they're all quite different. And the police said that they were trying to maintain law and order when a group of unruly protesters showed up and basically put them in a position where the police had no choice but to rather violently evict them from the premises. And Alcan will say approximately the same thing, and say Alcan also maintains that the protesters were asked to submit their concerns in writing. And the people who were there say that as soon as the blockade was formed, one of the head police officers showed up and basically told them that women would be raped if they didn't clear the way. And again, this is something that several people told us, many people told us. And it's something that appears in a different version in the police story as well. So the older woman got to the front of the line, and basically they opened their saris, and they said, "You'll have to rape us, but we're not going to let you continue." And then after this, a series of blanks were fired. People dispersed. 16 people were injured, and Alcan claims that 6 of these people were police officers. And again, we can't confirm that. But people were injured, and a couple of people were arrested. After this, there were a series of arbitrary arrests that have still continued, actually, until last week. And 70 unbailable warrants were issued. 15 people right now are detained on these warrants, and some of them are for charges as ridiculous as having stolen a chicken during a house raid. None of them are very credible. And several key villages, including Maikanch, where the protesters were shot in the year 2000, and Kuchepadar, and the village of Tikri, which is close, very close to the mine site, has been under near constant police surveillance ever since. It's been a case of very widespread repression and terror, and the people that we spoke to were in absolute defiance. They were committed to fighting the mine at all costs, but the situation has really made it very difficult for them to organize, for them to communicate with outsiders, and for outsiders such as ourselves to enter the region. The other thing that's important, actually, is bribery, because there is the repression, which, you know, has been a disincentive for people to organize. There's been the risk of imprisonment. The police have been circulating at local markets and picking people up, and that's definitely played a huge role in basically fear and terror in the region, but at the same time, there's a very sophisticated campaign of bribery. And this bribery is a way of targeting people, often key people in the movement and local factions, and basically getting them to switch sides or to support the company. And some of these people act as paramilitaries in the region. There are heavy, heavy consequences often for people who don't accept the bribes. And basically, as somebody in my conch said to us, communities, because of this type of interference in such an unstable situation, really, communities are being turned against themselves, basically. Divisions are being created and people are fighting each other, because this is a situation where people's lives and livelihoods are at stake, and it's been going on for a very long time. So on one hand, you have the repression, which makes it difficult for people to communicate, to organize, difficult for information to get out, difficult for strategies to be coordinated between villages, and basically difficult for certain people. Certain people have not been able to leave their villages to go to the market. People live in fear of being picked up and thrown in jail on hugely exaggerated charges, knowing that they won't get a fair trial. And at the same time, they're offered a lot of money to take the other side. So I think it's easy to imagine that people feel cornered, and they feel trapped, and they feel like there's absolutely no justice. And this, at the same time, is on tribal land. It's a land that they've been living on for hundreds of years, and the whole thing is really pretty ugly. When Alcan wrote to us and answered our questions, and when we talked to, we did talk to the Minister of Industry, we asked whether or not there was consent in the communities, because Alcan and UAIL and the government have been claiming that communities in Kashipur have agreed to the mine, that there is consent. And even though we didn't get an official statement from the local government based in the town of Raigarh, we did unofficially speak to a fairly high-level official who told us that all the communities agreed with the mine, that there was 100% consent, with the exception of two people from outside the region who don't support the mine. And it's interesting, because I think for companies and for the government, which is also tied because of, you know, debt, it's tied to structural adjustment packages and reforms and whatnot. So in this context, the word consent has a lot of weight. In, you know, 20 years of mega projects, there's been countless stories like this story that have surfaced, and countless in India, stories of displacement and repression in order to make way for mega projects. So now, I think, to get international banking backing, the government in Orissa, or the government of India, and also the multinational companies who are anxious to reap a profit, are very fixated on the term consent and very eager to show that there is agreement, that there is community support for their projects. And I think that Kashipur is interesting because it really forces us to look at the meaning of consent, because consent can be manipulated in a time of conflict and stress when people's lives are at stake. Consent can be bought in a region where there's crushing poverty and when people are struggling to make ends meet. Consent can be modeled. Consent can be sold. And it literally, some people will say that buying consent, that the cost of consent for the company has been in tens of thousands of dollars, because the expenditures of the companies are very difficult to estimate, since there's been really no infrastructure except for a police post. So I think that it's important, before believing any claims to consent in a region such as this, it's important really to get on the ground and to really question who is consenting and who is paying who to consent. As far as we know, Alcan really hasn't been itself at present in the region, but Alcan is a 45% stakeholder in UAIL, which is the Utkal Aluminium International Limited. And so I think it's mostly the Indian partner, Hindalco, that has been active in the region. And for the communities, there is no difference between Alcan and Hindalco and Utkal, or even the other companies that are active there right now. For them, the company, as they say in English, is an all-encompassing term that really describes the bulk of the corporations who are trying to extract all the resources in the region and displace hundreds of thousands of people, tens of thousands of people. So even though Alcan itself may not have been in the area, and actually I would really recommend that they do go and visit the area, there's still a heavy corporate presence. And the ties between the corporations, the police, and the local politicians, and the paramilitaries as well that they've been paying, make kind of a very large force, I guess, for the communities to fight against. And so in those terms, it's hard to separate all the parties, but they're there and they're active. At this point, I think that what we tried to do was maybe, like, hopefully anyways, something which will really contribute to the movement in Canada in some way, because it's very, very important for people to go and to see the situation and to talk with the People's Movement and basically to get the information that the company and that the government and that the police are actively trying to keep within the confines of the Kashipur region itself. Alcan is a Canadian company. It's based in Montreal, and there's a campaign in Montreal. And I think that it's crucial for people in Montreal to take action, of course, against Alcan, but not to stop at that either. Because even if Alcan pulls out, there'll still be other companies in Orissa who will be fighting the communities for the lands that they live on. And for us as internationals, without press passes, because we were there more as activists than as journalists, maybe, and internationals that had connections with the People's Movement, getting to Kashipur and getting to the villages was very, very, very complicated. Even though there's nothing on paper that says that internationals can't enter Kashipur, there's a huge police presence and there's paramilitary stations all over the place. And so we had to be very kind of subtle and clandestine about the whole thing. And what we did was pull into the town very early in the morning, get into a taxi and go directly to Kashipur before the authorities found out. And that was really our best bet of getting into the region. And there we had a translator and we went with a local activist from one of the communities who showed us around. And we managed to kind of subtly visit several affected communities before the authorities clued into the fact that we were there. And once they did, because the town we were based in is not a big town, we approached them and we asked them to speak with us. And when we went to the UAIL office, they gave us tea and we all sat around staring at each other politely for about 45 minutes. And then they told us that the only person who would speak to us from the company was a woman in Bombay. And we've contacted her by email and by phone, and she hasn't responded to any of our questions yet. And going to see the district collector, which, again, is the unelected mayor of the region, it was a similar experience. I think we must have spent about 4 hours in his office. And, again, we were told that he wouldn't speak to us. So, basically, for them it was a loss because it was difficult for us to get a pro-mining point of view. So what we came back with were basically hours and hours of stories of resistance and testimonies of people who have been fighting the mine for 12 years and voices of the activists in the region and nothing on the pro-mine side, which I think really kind of shows how much division there is right now and shows how much animosity and how deep the conflict has been driven. So our experience as journalists in the area was not an easy one. But again, I think it's really important for people to show solidarity, especially people in Montreal who have access to Alcan and who can approach Alcan and who can fight Alcan on home ground. But I think we also have a responsibility not to stop just at Alcan and to make sure that we continue to fight for the self-determination of people in Orissa.
That was a report filed by Brooke Thorndycraft, a member of CKUT's Community News Collective. For more information about the Alcant in India campaign in Montreal, you can email them at alcantinindia@yahoo.com. That's alcantinindia@yahoo.com.